What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Russell Westbrook is off to Houston.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
No! James Harden just caught a body here in Los Angeles.
And Westbrook is on the freeway.
What's up, guys? Like this podcast. My name is Solomon Elite, at Solomon Elite NBA on Twitter, joined by Adam Spolane. At Adam Spolane on Twitter. How you doing, man?
I'm good.
It is late. We are recording this on the jankiest of audio setups. We got one microphone, and we're keeping it in the middle of the table. We'll see how much it picks up. I'll figure out the rest in post. But how you doing, man?
I'm good. It's been quite a year so far.
It has been quite a week. You know, the last time I recorded a podcast with you was in that Las Vegas airport. Yeah. 5 months ago,
yeah, it's crazy.
After the Westbrook trade.
Actually, it might be almost exactly 5 months because that was, I think it was, what, July 12th?
Yeah, it was
so
July
12th. It's almost December 10th, so we're almost at that five-month mark.
It is crazy. It is crazy how much time has passed since that happened. Like, I think that was the last NBA trade actually made in the calendar year.
I think there might have been one smaller one, but there hasn't been anything in a long, long time. It's wild when you think about it.
Yeah, I can't even think of, like, even one salary dump or anything. I can't think of any trade off the top of my head. So the Rockets lost a game by 1 point to the Sacramento Kings at home in a game that, frankly, this shouldn't have been a contest. They were favored to win by 12. This Kings team is bad. Like, we all had high hopes for them coming into the season, but we all know now at this point of the season that they're a bad team. And
I'm going to push back on that. They got off to a terrible start. But they're now, what, 3 games below 500, which has you right on the doorstep of the playoffs. They just won in Dallas last night, and they're starting to get some guys back. I think that this is a game the Rockets obviously should have won, but this isn't like losing to the Knicks or Hawks or anything like that. This is a game you should win, but it's not the worst loss in the world.
But even if they won this game by like 3 points or whatever, right, I still think this game was way too close. Like, and this game and the Suns game in particular. Like, I thought they should have won the past two games by a combined 20 points. And instead, they won the last game by 6 points, and they lost the game by 1 point. Like, that's really bad to me. Like, especially when you talk about this team's obviously trying to be contender, right? They're trying to compete with the best of the best, the Lakers, the Bucks, the Clippers. The Lakers and Bucks are 21-3 right now. The Rockets are, like, what, something and eight?
They are 15-8 now.
15-8.
Like, not great.
That's not good enough.
It's not bad, but it's not great.
Yeah, it's not.
You're hoping for more.
Sure. They're going to win 50 games. They're going to be a good team. They're going to be probably a top four or five team in the Western Conference. They're still going to be a good team. But for a team that has title aspirations, I'm not sure if the way they're playing right now, specifically defensively, is good enough. Like, that last possession, to me, emblemized everything for them this season. They've been kind of an average team defensively.
I don't take it so much as in the last possession, because that's a hard it's a hard possession to it's a hard play to defend, just because you know that whatever happens, they're going to catch and shoot. They're looking to do something immediately, so you just don't want to be in that situation. I think Mike D'Antoni brought this up when we talked to him after the game. There was at one point where I think they were up 11 and they gave up three straight open threes. Those are the moments that bother you more than anything else. And it's just that they haven't been able to put 48 minutes together defensively enough. They've had some good defensive games. I thought this game, they actually started out really well defensively. The first four possessions, Sacramento calls a timeout.
Right.
They hadn't scored in the game. They come out of the timeout and then they just start bombing threes. And that's the problem, is that they just can't string enough of it together. They can't build on anything right now. But for me, I'm not making judgments yet about anything that they're doing at this point in the year, just because it's so early. You're trying to they're a science experiment at this point.
I'm gonna push back on that. It's early. Like, we're 22 games in. We've learned a lot about every team in the NBA so far, like, enough to where, like, I think these concerns about their defense are legit. Like, they allowed 91 points through three quarters. Like, that's bad. Like, that's really bad. And, like, the fourth quarter was just one bucket after another. It was basically sudden death. Like that's kind of where I'm talking about. Like I think, like they should be by the time they get to the fourth quarter, they should be up by 8 to 12 points against a team like this. And the fact that they're not doing that yet is a little bit of a concern to me. Like I think they can still, roster wise, get to a point where they're a contender. I don't think they're there yet. And I think even if Aaron Gordon comes back, Austin Rivers was obviously out tonight. He was illness. Tyson Chandler was obviously out tonight with the illness. Even if they get fully healthy, I don't think defensively they're good enough yet. And I don't know what it's going to take. Obviously, we've speculated on this podcast the kind of additions that are going to be available midseason. But I don't know. Like, until they get that kind of a player, like that one more B-plus defender that's ideally has some size, it's going to be really hard for me to buy into this team.
The whole thing that I said about it being early and they're kind of an experiment and you're just trying to, you know, see if all the pieces mesh together. The problem with that thinking, what I just said, is that the team is a team that's very similar to them as the Lakers, and the Lakers are flying and they seem to have no such growing pains with one another. Listen, they've got guys out. Gordon is a huge part of this team. He's not playing. You give them a little bit of a pass today because they didn't have Rivers, and Rivers is just an absolutely huge part of what they do defensively. So Mike D'Antoni really only played seven guys. That's not easy for a team like this, especially when they're relying on guys that are frankly unreliable. I mean, Ben McLemore has bounced around from team to team for a while. Gary Clark is still very, very young, and he gave them some good minutes, but you know, you got to expect a few breakdowns here and there while they have some guys out, because Ben McLemore is not going to play 33 minutes in April and May.
And he shouldn't have to.
And Gary Clark's not going to play 21 minutes in April and May. You hope that your guys are back and you're healthy and you're at full strength. So I'm going to wait to judge them for a bit, because I just want to see how it all looks. We have seen improvement. I think that's all you're looking for right now. You're looking to see improvement from certain spots, and I think you've seen improvement from opening night to tonight.
I guess one positive you can take away from this game is they've kind of figured out the Harden traps, in that when Westbrook catches it, he's just going to go. Like, no wasted time, just go. That's the closest thing to a cut as you're going to get in the NBA. Ideally, he should be cutting, but, like, if you're not cutting, that's the closest. Like, that's pretty good. Like, just be on the move right away. And the Kings have weak rim protection, so Westbrook was just scoring at the rim at will. The tough thing is, you mentioned this to me before that we started recording, is that when a team has elite rim protection, like let's just say Rudy Gobert, like Westbrook's not going to be able to score in that kind of a situation. He's probably going to have to pass to someone like Clint Capella or a shooter, and that kind of a possession can be a turnover, and a lot of their possessions have been turnovers when defenses collapse like that. And that kind of brings us back to the Westbrook trade. It's kind of fitting that we're five months out from the podcast we recorded, because these were kind of the issues we were raising that night. You know, whether or not the shooting would be a real issue for the Rockets, and the spacing, the floor spacing particularly, would that be a concern? And we've seen it a bunch of times already. Like, their teams are just doubling Harden every chance they get. Sometimes even without a screen, they're just doubling. And you'll see the help guy kind of like shift in his direction, like shade his in his direction, and be ready for just the slightest bit of opportunity to close in on that double. You saw a possession tonight where Harden was in the corner and that double came quick, and he tried to split the double team and he turned the ball over. Like, that kind of stuff is going to come up in the postseason. Like, there's no way teams aren't looking at this as a blueprint to defend the Rockets.
Yeah, no question. And the shooting is a problem, and we always knew it was going to be a problem. But you just mentioned this. You saw Westbrook start to get to the rim a little bit more, and at least try and make plays that way. And I thought he looked just really confident in this game. And, yeah, it's going to be hard to just attack the rim at will, and you're going to have to deal with rim protectors. But I think that as he gets more comfortable with the guys that are around him and they kind of understand what he's looking to do, then I think that he can make plays for other guys. And I think that he'll be able to create a lot of open shots. I mean, when Eric Gordon comes back and he's on the floor and Westbrook is driving to the rim and there's openings for him and he's looking around and he sees open guys on the perimeter, it's going to be Eric Gordon taking those shots a lot of the time. And so I think that's going to help them a lot. I thought today, result aside, I thought today was a positive just in the way that Westbrook played.
Yeah, and you're starting to see the past few games, they're offensively, they're putting more of a force on Westbrook. They're giving him the ball to start games more often than not. Harden's deferring, and Westbrook gets in a better rhythm. I think that is, like, the rhythm stuff is real with Westbrook. Like, he needs to, from the start of the game, he needs to be in a rhythm attacking the basket and being ready to make quick decisions, frankly. Sometimes you see a delay in his decision-making when he's attacking the rim or you know, a bad decision because he's just has a limited amount of possessions to work with, so he forces something, right? And I think that's worked out positively for the Rockets in terms of Westbrook getting involved. I think also the finger thing, like you've seen the tape go away from his hand. I think that's been a reason for him starting to play better. I thought that finger was a thing. Like he even talked about it with us. Like that was a thing that was bothering him, going to the basket, attacking and making passes like that. You know, when you have a finger that's literally taped to another finger, it's just hard. Mm-hmm. It's just hard to play basketball that way. So I think that's. You know, him getting healthy is obviously helps. Let's talk about the Westbrook trade for a second, because I really want to talk about this one more time with you, because I remember that night, I think we differed a little bit in how we thought about it, in that you understood the trade because I went back and I listened to it, and I think you understood the trade in that the Rockets were getting younger, and this was a concerted effort to make the team younger. You weren't necessarily saying that the Rockets were becoming a better basketball team by this trade, but you understood it, the rationale behind giving up all those picks and the pick swaps, because in the end, maybe it may not be worth it this season, but you're saying in 3 or 4 seasons, it'll pay off. I think even at the time, I thought like the fit was a concern to me. The defense that Chris Paul brought night in, night out, you don't get that from Westbrook. The shooting, obviously. Your teams can't do this with Chris Paul. Or they just can't. Like, they weren't doing it. The reason, you know, people talk about how this double-team strategy has just come out of nowhere. It hasn't come out of nowhere. It's come out of roster construction. It's come out of the way the Rockets are built this season as opposed to past seasons. Like, the teams can afford to do this now, and they couldn't afford to last season because there was always four spacing options on the court at all times with Harden. Capella was the dive guy, and they had 3 other shooters. And Harden had unlimited amount of space to work with. Now he doesn't have that space. You know, that room is shrunk. And I think you're seeing how Chris Paul's performed this season. He's had a bounce back year. All his percentages are back up. 3-point shooting, his finishing at the rim is back up. He's drawing more fouls again. He's making quicker decisions. I think he's rehabbed from that hamstring, frankly. Like, I thought that was a big thing last year that people didn't talk enough about. Like, he was coming off a hamstring that summer. And I thought, you know, he wasn't 100% to start the year. And I thought his play showed it. And this season, he looks healthy. He looks, frankly, he looks like the better player between the two. And that may be controversial to say, but I don't think it's controversial. You put their numbers side by side. I think Chris Paul is clearly the more efficient player, and we already know he's a better defender. And that's kind of why I think Chris Paul, if Chris Paul is clearly the better player this season, this trade has another dynamic in terms of evaluation that we need to consider, in that this may not be a wash this season. And in future seasons, sure, Westbrook may come out in the better, but how much better is he going to be to justify losing a year of Harden's prime?
It's fair. The difference, though, for me with Chris Paul is that he's only playing 31 minutes. And I think the minutes thing matters a lot. And Westbrook doesn't really have those same types of minutes restrictions. Let's see, tonight he played 36 today, and he was a little bit of foul trouble. So I think that's the big key, is just the minute situation, and that you don't have to necessarily nurse Chris Paul the way that you have to nurse, you don't have to nurse Westbrook, I think, the same way that you nurse Chris Paul a little bit. The basketball fit here, it's odd. It's just gonna be hard to figure out, I think, for a little bit, and Westbrook's got to change the way that he plays. But if it's a wash between the two this season, I still think I understood the trade at the time. I understand the trade now. Would I have made it? I still don't know if I would have made it.
Yeah,
no, that's the thing.
In fact, that was one of the questions I asked you. I think you said the same exact thing. I'm not sure if you would have made it. And I still
can't answer whether or not I would have done it, just because I knew what they had with Chris Paul. I knew exactly what the team was going to be. I knew how they were going to look. And listen, we've seen how it looks right now. doesn't mean it's going to look the exact same way once you get to April and May. It could look very, very different. It could fail. It could absolutely fail. But here the question is, would they have been good enough to beat the Lakers or Clippers or whoever else with Chris Paul? The team that they had built the last couple of years, was that team going to be good enough? I think that they saw it and they said, no, we probably aren't good enough. We've probably hit our ceiling, even though the one team that we can't get past is the best team ever, maybe, and that team's gone now. So I think that they said, you know what, Chris Paul's going to be another year older. You don't know how he's going to react. You just don't. You don't know how a guy's going to react at 34 years old. And we're seeing it right now. I mean, listen, he's played really well, but it's December 9th. We've got a long way to go in the season. You know, you're through 20-something games. You still got another 50-some-odd games to go.
And that's something that Harden said after the Suns win, where he said it's not going to be a 20-25 game thing. This is going to be a full season thing in terms of the growing pains with Westbrook. And I certainly understand that. And
let me add to that too, because we were talking to Austin Rivers before the game Saturday.
Sure.
And that was one of the things he said. Like, who cares how it looks now? Who cares? It does not. What happens in the regular season does not matter. What's going to matter is what happens in April, what happens in May, what happens in June. So they could go out and be terrible the rest of the regular season, but as long as they're in the playoffs, who cares? And they could go and finish first in the West and just go on a huge tear. If they lose early in the playoffs, then none of it matters. So it's all going to be about how it looks into the playoffs, and I think that they're just going to – they have to build towards that and get better and better and better. And I think you would say that they're a better basketball team now than they were, what, 22 games ago, which is all that matters right now.
All right, Adam, let's take a quick break to talk about our great sponsors at Harry's. Looking for a great gift for someone in your life? Now I'm going to share a little secret with you. Every guy on the planet gets socks, wallets, t-shirts, you know, the usual. And what ends up happening is we get it, we wear it in front of you to show that we appreciate it, and it ends up in a closet somewhere. We don't really wear it for the rest of the year. So if you're going to get us something practical like Harry's razors that we're actually going to use every day. Listeners of this show can get $5 off any Harry's shave set by heading to harrys.com/bluewire. Free shipping ends on December 16th, so act now. It's a great deal for you and for him. Holiday sets start at just $20. That's within Secret Santa limits. And Harry's blade refills are just as low as $2 each, so your guy will save money over time. It comes ready to gift in a handsome holiday gift box, and your gift gives back. 1% of each sale will be donated to charitable organizations. Isn't that awesome? That's pretty cool. As a special offer for fans of this show, we partnered with Harry's Razors to give you $5 off any shave set, including their limited edition holiday sets when you go to harrys.com/bluewire. Plus, you'll get free shipping. Each Harry's shaving set comes with a weighted handle with option to engrave, 5-blade razor cartridges, foaming shave gel for a rich lather, travel cover to protect your blades, packaged in a handsome holiday gift box. Free shipping ends on December 16th, so act now. Just go to harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire. And going back to, you know, April, May, and June, I really think last season after game six, like that left us, like leaving the Toyota Center, you felt like there was going to be major change. You just felt that. Because, you know, obviously no KD.
It was a bad loss. It was an awful loss. It's the worst loss that they have had. I don't know. Well, obviously the Spurs series was obviously really bad. And then if you go back before that, maybe the Utah Game 7 loss in 2007, those might be the two worst losses that they've had since the championship years. And obviously they made some changes. I don't think that they went into the offseason thinking that they were going to trade Chris Paul, but it happened. And you go from there.
And that was a game where, I'm not sure if people remember, Chris Paul played well that game.
He was great in that game. He was the best player.
Yeah. And they couldn't win that game. Like, I thought, like, that was, it felt like their need. I'm not sure if I would have necessarily advised the Rockets to make major change, but I certainly would have understood if that was the rationale coming out of that game. And they certainly went big fish hunting right afterwards. I mean, they went after Jimmy Butler to start the summer. I mean, people forget about that. Like, that was their original plan. They wanted to get Jimmy Butler and add on to this team. And when that kind of fell through the cracks, there was a lot of pressure from outside that, you know, perhaps the Rockets aren't good enough with this core and they need to make another major change. And they went out and made the Westbrook trade.
Well, the unanswered question is, what happens if Kawhi Leonard stays in Toronto? what happens if he goes to the Lakers, or what happens if Oklahoma City and the Clippers can't agree to that trade. Then what happens? And the answer is probably Chris Paul stays here. And then they just essentially run back the same team. So they made changes because Oklahoma City made changes. That's basically what happened. I think that Oklahoma City was content with just going back with Paul George and Russell Westbrook another season. Actually, Sam Presti basically said that. He said that on Woj's podcast last week, where they were going to probably go back with the same team. But as soon as Paul George left, there was really, for Westbrook, there was no reason for him to stay, because they were certainly going to be in rebuild mode. And it just happened to work out where the Rockets had the contract to make the trade work. And they had the assets too.
Yeah. So let's go get some news. I think this is the last time I want to talk about this trade for at least a couple months. I want to come back and evaluate it later. But
Would you have done it? Now that you have 23 games, would you have made the trade?
No.
Okay.
No. I think even at the time, I still felt Chris Paul was a better player. And even if he aged poorly, I like the initial, I like prioritizing Harden's prime. First and foremost, and then worrying about the rest later. And I think that salary becomes easier to dump if Chris Paul comes back and has a bounce back season. It becomes easier to dump two more years of Chris Paul as opposed to three more years.
But let's see if Oklahoma City can trade him, because for everything that you've heard, they have not. Nobody seems to be all that interested in trading for Chris Paul, and this is after he's playing well in one fewer year on the contract. So
we will see.
I don't know if it's possible to trade Chris Paul at this point.
Yeah, that's an open question, too. Let's go on and get to some news. Let's talk about, first, Kelly Eco reported, I think in a combined column with Shams Charania this morning, that the Rockets are open to trading future draft picks for possibly a wing player to improve their roster this season. And it looks like they're going to need to, because as we mentioned, their defense, I still don't think it's rock solid yet. My question is how they put together the salaries to do so. So obviously you have Gerald Green, you have Nene, you have Gary Clark, Isaiah Hartenstein, and I guess you can throw in Ben McLemore. That gets you to like $10 to $12 million.
I don't think it gets you that high.
Yeah, I'm doing rough math in my head. Like that's my question. How they get to that salary number, and who in that kind of a range? You know, when you max out all your guys in terms of money. Who in that kind of a range is available to be had? Because it's tough. A lot of teams are going to want the players that the Rockets are chasing. Like, obviously, Iguodala is option A, B, and C, right? Like, that's the prime available player that everybody wants this season. But again, everybody wants him this season. The Rockets may not have the opportunity to land him in a buyout market kind of situation. Somebody might trade for him before they get to that point. And you look at the kind of players that are available after that. I mean, I guess you can look at the New York and look at some of their players. That, Bobby Portis, Taj Gibson's a guy that I think a lot of people are interested in. And I think Jackson Gatlin mentioned on a podcast a couple weeks ago with me. That's obviously intriguing. But I'm not sure if there is a player after Iguodala, other than maybe Marcus Morris is someone that I like, that's available to be had. That significantly shifts Houston's defense from what is it? It's 15 right now. To like top 10 to 5. I'm not sure if there's a player that to be had that helps Houston get to that other level defensively.
I mean, I just don't even think it's worth talking about, because they don't have the money. They don't have the contracts to make anything work. I mean, they have five players that make $8 million. They have five players that make more than $4 million. That's it. They have the five players. So unless you're going to break up those five with Westbrook, Harden, Capella, Gordon, and Tucker, there's really nothing that they can do. Because they're not trading. House is at 3-5. They're not trading him.
Yeah.
Then you have Nene at 2.5. Austin Rivers is at 2.1. They're not going to trade him. McLemore is at 2 million. Sepulosa is at 1.6. Gerald Green's at 1.6. Tyson Chandler's at 1.6. Hartenstein's at 1.4. Michael Frazier is at, he's at 2. That doesn't really count. Gary Clark's at 1.4. So they could stack all those guys, and you're still not going to get to a number that gets you Marcus Morris or it gets you anyone in that $10 million range. The guys that you're talking about that they can get are guys that are basically on rookie contracts at this point, or minimum type guys. That's really all that they're looking at this point. If you want names, because I did go through it a little bit today, like Marco Bellinelli is a guy who makes 5'8". I mean, again, he's not going to help your defense,
yeah.
But he's at least a shooter, and he can play in big spots. I mean, those are the type of guys that you're looking at right now at this point. There was him. Let me find some of the other – I basically named three guys earlier in the day. and there's just not much there. Jay Crowder is a guy, I think he's at 7-something. You can probably make that work. Davis Bertans doesn't make a lot of money. Those are the type of guys that you're looking at. Again, those guys have holes. I think Crowder is probably be the guy that you would want out of the three because of the defense, but there's just not a lot out there. And that's kind of, we talked about this in July. That's was kind of the point of Amon Shumpert, was that he was a guy that you could sign to bird rights and you could give him that $10 million contract and find a way to move off of it. And I obviously they didn't do it kind of because of the luxury tax, but that would have been, that's the way to get the team better, and they didn't take advantage of that.
Yeah, that could definitely come back to haunt them in the end. And I think they did have a standing offer with Iman, but even that standing offer didn't put them above the luxury tax, and it was clear that Iman was never going to take it. Yeah, it's going to be tough to improve the roster. You're looking at pretty much buyout.
Yeah, that's the only thing they can do is the buyout market.
You're crossing your fingers and hoping that the buyout market is fruitful this year, and even if it's fruitful, that they'll pick you, which is two big dominoes, yeah. Right? Like these guys are going to be highly sought after. And it's going to be really tough for the Rockets to acquire that kind of a player. And even if they're willing to trade multiple draft picks, again, the real question here is the salary. How do they make it work? And I don't know. We've looked at it 10 different ways. It's hard to combine salary to get to a kind of a number that adds you a difference maker.
They talked about the buyout market last year, and obviously they got Rivers and Kenneth Faried. But that was early in the year. Once buyout market really got into gear after the deadline, they didn't get anybody. They were completely left out in the cold. They missed out on Wayne Ellington. They missed out on Markieff Morris. They missed out on everybody. So there's no guarantee that the buyout market's gonna net you anything. So they're in a tough spot. I mean, they are when you don't have anybody else aside from five guys making more than $4 million. There's just not a whole lot you can do. You're kind of stuck. So I mean, really, you're starting to get into, do you trade Clint Capela? And the answer for me would be no. So.
Yeah, you can't trade Clint Capela. Let's talk about this odd story with the Rockets protesting the Spurs loss. It's not odd in that they did it, because I maintain that if there's an opportunity for the Rockets to get a competitive advantage, they will take it, no matter what. Like, no matter if it makes them look bad PR-wise, no matter if it makes them look whiny, or if it makes them look like sore losers, they don't care. They do not care how they look. They care about winning games and trying to win a championship. And to me, it was clear that they were going to protest this. Like the question wasn't whether or not they would protest this. The question was whether or not they'd get anything from it. And it looks like today the NBA ruled that they're not going to get anything. The officials involved has been disciplined, quote-unquote disciplined. Yeah, nobody really knows what that means, but they're not gonna replay the game. They're not gonna replay the last 7 minutes, 7.5 minutes. They're not gonna do anything to appease the Rockets and try to get that win back for them. I realize that San Antonio game was a bad loss, but this is what the Rockets were gonna do. Even if this had like a 1% chance of working out, I just felt like they were always gonna protest this game.
It's what you do. I mean, you see it with the Players Association. I don't know if it necessarily happens as much in basketball, but in baseball, when there's any sort of a suspension, the Players Association is going to appeal it, just because that's what you do. You appeal it. So they filed the protest to file the protest. I think, if anything, it started a conversation about what to do in these types of situations. And I think that's probably what will be the legacy of the protest, is that they at least get a conversation going about, when there is an obvious call like this, especially with a clear X or Y type result, where it's a made basket or it's not a made basket, you should be able to go to the monitors to at least check on that. And hopefully that's what this results in, that something happens with this. And I had no problem with them protesting. Obviously, you kind of knew that, because I think there were some reports after the game last Tuesday that the Rockets thought that the league would jump in and do something before the protest. And you knew as soon as the league didn't do anything that the protest wasn't going to get anything done. So, you know, it is what it is. I don't think they had any thinking that when they filed the protest that anything would happen. So,
yeah, I'm going to go ahead and read you James Caper's statement post game, because to me, this was complete and utter bull. This statement, like, here, I'm going to read it, and you guys be the judge. All right, when the play happened, James Harden goes in for a dunk. and then the ball appears to us to pop back up through the net. When that happens, that is basket interference. To have a successful field goal, it must clear the net. We have since come in here and looked at the play. He dunked it so hard that the net carried it back over a rim a second time, so it in fact did clear the net and should have been a successful field goal. As to could the play have been reviewed, it is a reviewable matter, but you have a window of 30 seconds to challenge the play during the timeout that he had, and while they were protesting the call, trying to get clarification on it, that window passed, so therefore it elapsed, and they were not able to do it. So, to me, I read this statement, and I'm just like, this is he's just lying. Like, he's just like, this was not called a basket interference. Like, you go back and look at the playbook, this was, like, it was just James Harden missed dunk. No call, like, watch the game. There wasn't a whistle. There wasn't anything. Like, it was just, they thought that it didn't count. They thought the ball didn't go through the hoop, and it was a play on. And when you go back and look, so they say that Mike D'Antoni doesn't challenge the call. Well, he calls timeout right away. What other reason would he be calling timeout right away? They're up 13, 7.5 minutes to go.
Well, he didn't call timeout right away because it was a they're still playing. Yeah, it's a play on, and they didn't have the ball. So yeah, you couldn't do that. I don't know. There was a stoppage at some point, and because that's the other
It went one. Out of bounds. That's
yeah,
what it was.
Because yeah, that and that's the other thing is that you can't just like stop play to challenge something.
Yeah.
Even if you have the ball, you can't do that. The challenge system, I like it. I'm for it. I think it was a good idea for them to do. There's still some issues with it. I mean, there's still some things that you kind of have to figure out, because right now the only time that you can really challenge is on a call. And because there wasn't really a call made on that play, you couldn't really – there was nothing to really challenge. So the whole thing was awkward. Obviously, the explanation from James Capers didn't make a whole lot of sense, especially
when – That's being nice.
Especially when you compare it to what Mike D'Antoni said after the game. So I think everyone was just kind of caught, and they didn't really know what to do. They didn't really know what to say. It's unfortunate because James Capers is a good official. I mean, he's a finals ref. He's now, with all the retirements that they've had, he's probably one of the most experienced refs that they have in the entire league. So it happened. You move on from it. And you try and make sure that it never happens again. Like that's the big key, is that making sure that something like that doesn't ever happen.
Yeah, and to be clear, like nobody here is saying that this is the reason why they lost. Like they had seven.
They were so bad
on defense. They had seven.
Bad on offense. When you blow a big lead, you're bad everywhere. And they were bad everywhere at the end of the game. They got beat. They should have never come to that. But that's the position that they're in.
Yeah, and let's just say there wasn't enough time to catch up in regulation. Well, you had two overtime periods to beat a bad Spurs team, right? Like you had two overtime periods to correct this, and enough time, in my opinion, enough time had passed for you to get over it, and they didn't get over it. But yeah, that aside, this was a bizarre explanation from James Capers, and I agree with you. I'm for the challenge too. I think it's an admirable system. Obviously, they still need to tweak it, correct some things, get the officials used to understanding this review window of 30 seconds, because there was a mess up in actually another game that the Rockets played against the Clippers, where Doc Rivers called a timeout, 30 second window expired, and they didn't get to challenge. But apparently, they still lost their timeout, and they weren't allowed to call timeout later on in the game. So the officials are still messing this up. It's going to take a while for all parties to get used to this. And there are still situations where it's unclear whether or not you should challenge. The Rockets apparently have somebody on their bench with a tablet out checking, and Mike D'Antoni is going to look over, and that guy has to be like 100, like 2,000% sure whether or not it's a correct call. The challenge.
You almost, and listen, you have challenge systems in sport. You have challenge system in tennis. In tennis, you have to make your challenge immediately.
Yeah.
And it's a lot quicker, and it's very efficient. In baseball, they basically get as long as they want. You know, the umpire will stand up and hold up his hand to stop play while you have somebody on the phone talking to somebody in the replay room trying to decide whether or not that you want to challenge. In the NFL, you get until the next play begins. It's just – it's tough in basketball. And I think you almost have to say, hey, don't even worry about the replays. If you want to challenge something, you got to do it on the spot. And I think that might be the best way to do this, to streamline it. Now, hey, it's going to result in a lot of mistakes, but that to me, that might be the best way going forward. Just saying, hey, if you don't like something, then you can't rely on replays. You just got to go challenge because you can't hold up the game and you can't rely on the replays. I don't know. That, to me, might be what they have to start doing.
Yeah, and in this specific situation, like, I don't even think it warranted a challenge. Like, it was a made field goal. Yeah. Like, it was a made field goal. Like,
I'm talking about the challenge system on a whole.
On a normal play, right, yeah. And apparently all the analytics people say that a two-point play is a two-point play, so it doesn't really matter when you challenge. In my opinion, there's still a human element to that. Like, I still think a challenge at the end of the game has a little bit more value in that it's a little bit more decisive in how a game goes. And
I think that teams are a little bit more wary to challenge at the end of a game because they don't want to lose a timeout.
That's true.
And so if you're holding your timeouts, if you're holding your challenge into the fourth quarter, you challenge something and you lose that timeout, and you might need that timeout later. That's why I almost think it's better to use the challenge early in the game. Get it out of the way. And again, it depends on the call. So it's all relative. On you saw D'Antoni challenge a three-pointer today. That would have been helpful in this game. I mean, those 3 points, possibly 4 points, could have been the difference in this game. I mean, they had, what, 4 points taken off? They had points taken off the board because of the challenges today.
Yeah,
they lost today by a point.
And ironically, the official in Secaucus was none other than James Capers himself. Yeah, he was
one of them. He wasn't the only one. There's multiple guys in there, so I don't know if he was like the guy sure. Who was looking at the plays. But
yeah, but it's still funny. It's still funny. I think like, and there's also when you can use it, and like there's a debate whether or not you should use it when you lose points or whether or not it's a key foul on one of your best players and you don't want your player to get into foul trouble. And for the most part, I feel like Mike D'Antoni has tended to bias towards that more, especially when it's a foul on Harden. He'll be quick to challenge that. Yeah, it's interesting. There's still a lot to learn on all elements. I don't think they should get rid of this. I think they should add on to it. If anything, they should expand on to clarify, I should say, what a challenge encompasses, what this 30-second window means, what you can challenge, expand on what you can challenge. I would like that much more. Yeah, I'm in favor of the challenge. I think this specific situation was just bizarre. It was just bizarre. Not the reason the Rockets lost the game, but I definitely understood why they protested the loss.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, guys, that's it for the Ranch News Podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. This is Adam Spolane, at Adam Spolane on Twitter. Make sure to give him a follow. Give us 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to us on Google Play, Spotify, or Stitcher. And yeah, guys, good night.